Today on the Av Podcast, I put together a four-man pod on the trades from last week with my guests, Randall Walter from the Etobicoke Thunder AAU program, Jules, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, and Headley, my past contributor from South Shore Ave. Part one of the podcast, we discuss the trades that's closest to our hearts. In other words, we discuss the Raptors' recent acquisitions of Serge Ibaka and P.J. Tucker. Then in part two, we discuss the DeMarcus Cousins trade to the Pelicans and some of the winners and losers from the trade deadline season. This podcast was originally recorded immediately after the Raptors and Celtics game last Friday night. Also, and this is a little disclaimer, this podcast contains some explicit language. So if the children are around, cover their ears or send them to their room. We don't want to scar the kids. We love the kids.
Martin loved the kids. I love the kids.
To listen to more podcast shows and blog write-ups, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. Hashtag 51416. Let's go.
Welcome to the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the Av Podcast. We got a four-man pod today to discuss the landscape of the NBA and the after effects of the trade deadline moves. It's a box without the one. A box without the one today. I'd like to welcome back Headley, past contributor to South Shore Av. What's good?
Yo, you know what, Calvin? We still have to talk about that Charlie Murphy podcast you put on me. So right now, I'm going to just tell you fuck off and go introduce your next guest.
Okay, whatever. I'll move on with my truth-telling lips. That's what I'll do. That's all good. It's all good. You can go fuck yourself, too. Also, I'd like to welcome back my guest from the NBA Western Conference Preview Pod, Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish. What's going on, brother?
Everything's good. Everything's good, man. Thank you for having me back.
Yes, no doubt. And last but not least, we got the official captain of the light skin team, coach and trainer of the Etobicoke Thunder AAU basketball team, Randall Walter. What's good?
Yes, sir. Hashtag minus ones. We back in the building.
And you and Julian are back for the second time now. So, you know, you guys can help yourselves. You guys can go get your own drinks now. Bacon selfish is on the middle shelf.
I will.
You got some bullshit biscuits out there too, Calvin?
What's that?
You got some bullshit biscuits out there too?
Bullshit biscuits. You need to watch your mouth. This is what you're trying to say.
Hey, this is a grown man podcast. This ain't for no little kids.
Anyways,
thanks for the faint hearted, man.
Anyways, let's not waste any time. Let's get into these trades and what's been happening with the trade deadline and the one that everyone's been talking about, Ersan Ilyasova to the Hawks for Tiago Splitter's expiring contract. Telling
yes,
you, brothers, I love that move. I love that move. That expiring contract is everything. Well, you know what?
What about Hibbert, man?
Oh, hey. Listen.
Hey, representing the Trinity boy.
Listen. And Toronto's own Talanis, man, he going to the Lakers.
Yeah, man.
Well, you know what? That's good for him. Hopefully,
yeah. He might get some burn.
Exactly.
I hope so.
He's gonna get burned, so it's like Tech Nation with him running point.
Exactly.
Still got a broke jumper, but shout out, my peoples from Bounce, and shout out Team Ennis. We're coming for you, baby.
you give a shout out and you take it back in the same sentence. Shout out, we coming for you.
It's like that passive aggressive. Let's go into just before we start and go into like the trade deadline. I know y'all heard KD going on Shaq today, right? It's that passive aggressive. I think some of y'all read the statement, but if you heard it live, it was even better. He came out of like, you know what I mean, Shaq's Shaq's a dominant player, but I mean, the guy can't shoot free throws. You know, he's one of the greatest of all times, but you know what I mean? You know, the guy, all he does is dunk. He's just power. You know, I know, yo, he's like a 6-time NBA champ, but you know what I mean? Like, the guy really can't dribble.
Yeah, I saw that. Yo, the one line that came out of that got me is when he said he has no skills.
It was like one of the top 50 players of all time, but the guy got no skills. So it was like a compliment, then he's a slap.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you what, though. We're definitely going to get into that Shaq versus JaVale McGee thing at the end of this podcast, because I got some things to say about that one. Honestly, the extension of this All-Star break, man, is great for business, because the trade deadline season is become an exclusive event at this point. There's no games that's in the way to interfere with the interest of it. By the time, you know, the first game comes through, it's Thursday night. All the trades are done. Everybody knows where they are, where they're going, if they're staying put. It's basically turned into like a movement at this point now, the trade deadline. You know, it was exciting the last few days. Well, basically since the Boogie Cousins trade, right after, literally like a minute after the All-Star game was over. But you know what? Being that, you know, this is close to the city, this is close to our hearts here, let's get into the Serge Ibaka trade for Terrence Ross in the first rounder. You know, I'll start with you, Julian, but just before you give your answer here, honestly, I think it's a great move by Masai being able to make that trade without touching the core. You know, I think it's a good trade. I think the trade can be elevated to great if he reverts back to his OKC days in terms of blocking shots, you know, playing the hustle man role, dirty. Like, I think it's really important that if we can see that Ibaka, like, similar to what we saw tonight, because as we're recording this, we just finished watching Boston lose to Toronto on Ibaka's first night. Mm-hmm. He has 15 points and 7 boards. So, I mean, if we can get that Ibaka, I think this goes from a good trade to a great trade. But let me get your thoughts.
You know what? If we get that Ibaka for this season or for the rest of these, like, 20 games, it'll be a great trade. I'm saying that because I really don't think we're going to have that Ibaka going forward. Like, if we do sign him to long term, for the last few years, his career stats have been on the decline. But what I saw tonight, I'm hoping that he'll be motivated, because it is a contract year. It is a team that's going to go deep into the playoffs. I'm hoping that he's motivated to bring it every night. And as for what we gave up, I loved it. I was hoping that we would trade Ross or Valanciunas, but that's another story. But I was hoping that we traded Ross at his peak, because I don't think Ross is going to get any better than what we saw for this year. And he played well this year. So yeah, trading Ross and 2 second-rounders and freeing up time for Powell, I thought was a no-brainer, and I love the move.
All right, Randall, what's your thoughts?
No, I think everything Julian said, I'm kind of on board. I mean, the one thing with Ibaka is, I mean, like Julian said, you're not going to get the Ibaka from OKC. I mean, how old is he now? They say, 29? But really,
Nobody knows.
Is like 36.
Exactly.
So, but the one thing is it's all about schemes, right? His stats have been going down, and all due respect for him, I mean, we don't know what Serge can offer right now, right? His stats have been going down because his role has changed, right? When he came in with OKC, you know, he's coming off that week. He's a really good weak side defender, but he ended up playing more like a stretch four later with OKC. So, you know, when you play a stretch four and you're playing matchup ball, coaches are going to, you know, then you're guarding a stretch four, right? So he wasn't able to really guard the weak side and get as many blocks because he's kind of guarding the perimeter, right? So that hurt his game. And then, you know, they kind of saw him as a stretch four, kind of like a Love, where they wanted to open up the inside so that Westbrook and KD can do their thing, right? Which kind of hurt his game too, right? His game is high energy. It's like, you know, running up and down the floor, and then if he needs to pop, you know, I like what they're using today with the pick and pop, and that works too to spread the floor. I think if we use him in the context with how OKC used him on their deep championship, you know, finals run, I think that you'll get some value out of him. Now, is he going to be blocking at the rate he was before? No, but I think he's still going to be effective on defensive end and the offensive end, because you know, I think when Larry comes back, him running that court, that's automatically another, you know, let's say he averaged 15 today. I think that adds on another four buckets, you know. So let's say I think he can get around that 17, 18 if everything goes well and that the offense starts to flow. But I think it's a great, great pickup and will help the Raps.
Yo, you remember it was about this time last year, Calvin, when you did a podcast, and I said, you know what would be a good guy for a Raptors fit would be Serge Ibaka. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, you can be a little bit more enthusiastic about that when I ask that question. But just to point off,
pause for a second. Pause for a second. I will definitely cut that part out of the podcast. Go ahead.
To what Randall and Julian are saying, to piggyback what they're saying, I agree completely with their train of thoughts and what Ibaka can do. I felt the whole time when we had signed Terrence Ross was just to flip that contract. So we finally found the piece to flip it for, because I think that was strategic right from the yeah, we gave up a late 2017 pick. But quite honestly, with us bringing in two rookies last year, and then we're gonna have to bring another one this year, I think that was fair. I also think with the asking connection with him and Messiah, I feel like, you know, there's always a risk you get in a rental and giving up a piece such as a Terrence Ross and a pick. But I honestly don't think that there's any real threat of him leaving. I think him and Messiah have that kind of, I wouldn't say a respect necessarily, just a respect, but I think they probably have some kind of communication as to what it will take. And by any means, he's gonna abort ship. And I also think we might be able to get him at a fair price, which again will make this deal better once we know what those numbers are. But on paper right now, and from what we saw with that first game, kudos on him.
And I don't think you make that trade, obviously, without getting a feel that you have a good chance of getting him back. Now,
yeah, exactly.
My thing I'll ask, though, is that, like, do you think he might change his mind if he's, you know, if it's more of this pass it to Will ISO offense that the Raptors have been playing? Because, mind you, I mean, DeRozan had a great game, but, my God, he was on his Kobe tonight. And when you're in your free agent year and you're looking at your prospects of, you know, these last 20-something games or 30-plus games, you know, including the playoffs, and you're watching your options and you're, you know, you're not really touching the ball that often, you know, especially when Lowry gets back, like, you know, do you think there's a chance that he might change his mind?
No.
You don't think so?
At the end of the day, it's going to come down to a dollar. If he gets his money and it's here in Toronto and they're winning, I don't think he really cares. At this point in his career, at this point, no.
But when you say get his dollars, do you think we're gonna have to overpay him? I don't know.
I really don't know. But like Calvin's question is like he's asking like because of DeRozan, you know how he's ball does
no.
go around
no,
him
no.
and he's is no, that determine if he leaves or he stays? Nah, I don't think so. If
no,
he gives
no,
the money that he wants, exactly. He'll stay.
Yeah, because guys, at this point in his career, he knows what he is. But the main, there's two things what I was trying to say earlier when Headley was talking is that what it comes down to, too, is remember who his agent is, right?
Who is it now?
Who's his agent?
His agent's the same as Kyle Lowry's.
Oh, okay, that's right.
So, right,
okay.
there's already talks in place from what I hear internally that they already are working something else. And the other thing is it all depends on how deep the Raptors go into this playoff push. If they push, let's say, Cleveland to 7 games, or if they beat them, like just say some miracle happens. No, I'm just saying, you never know what
possible,
can happen, right?
Yeah,
it's possible with the team. It's possible they can take him. Will they do it realistically? No, like, you know, I don't think so, but you never know what can happen, right? But all I'm trying to say is that if they push them to 7 games, or if it becomes like a real, real good series, the Messiah has a real hard task. If they get knocked out, and you know, in the second round or even the first, it's easy for Masai.
I agree.
Right? I'm telling you right now, if they make that deep playoff push again, it's going to be hard. And it's already known that Masai has an open paycheck, checkbook. Sorry, so he can open up and say, you know what, I'm going to go over cap. And if he goes over Cat, now how much he goes over is the question, but I'm sure that, hey, it's already in the talks.
Yeah, I agree. And, another good thing about these last 20 games, we can see if they actually mesh together, you know, between Lowry, DeRozan, and Ibaka. We can evaluate coaches and, you know, Masai, and, of course, including going into the playoffs itself. But right now, it's good to actually assess and take a step back to see if they can actually blend, because it's hard to play with DeMar. It's hard.
Very hard. But again, what it comes down to is at the end of the season, or not even end of the season, Ibaka, if you're talking about retaining Ibaka, right? Really, Ibaka at this point in his career, going to Orlando and seeing what it's like and playing in OKC, he knows his role. He's never going to be that guy that's going to be the man on the team. He knows that, right? But he has to be the third or some nights the second option. And I think that's what he wants. He wants to be recognized. He can be like an Al Horford was on Atlanta and an All-Star, I think, in the East next year.
You know what? You know why I disagree with you guys a little bit? Just because he played with OKC. He knows how it is playing with ISO ball. I'm not saying he liked it, but he worked, with KD and Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't seeing the rock.
Agreed. Yeah.
And not to say that these two are on those levels,
no,
for sure not. But okay. Also at the same time with him, as you pointed, Randall, playing with the bottom feeder like Orlando, even though it was only for half a season, he wasn't playing relevant minutes. He wasn't playing relevant ball. Mm-hmm. And now to be being played back in a situation with Toronto where he's playing for something at the end of the season, as opposed to at Orlando, they're just collecting paychecks. Mm-hmm. It may not necessarily be at the same level as playing with KD and Westbrook, but because he has that experience, he knows how it is playing with ISO, and it's not going to be as bad. So if this was his first experience, his first point around and having to deal with that, I'll probably be a little bit more reluctant about him wanting to resign. But seeing that he's gone through that, and it's not going to be as bad as it was in OKC, I think we have a good chance of retaining him.
It's not a factor.
And he's excited to come. Like, don't forget it. Like, he's, and this is coming from other sources. When I say other sources, Durant and him still talk. And Durant said, man, I spoke to him the other day. He is extremely excited. Like, this is what he wanted. He wanted to come to Toronto and get traded. He didn't want to go to Orlando initially, right?
Yeah, don't think that him and MU hasn't been talking about this for a minute. That's why I say that African connection is strong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he wasn't pulling that deal without him knowing that it's going to be just a rental.
Plus Biz told him. Biz and him were really
That's
close.
That's true, too. Very true.
Exactly.
Did you guys hear that he didn't get along with people in Orlando?
About him, right? I read that. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Apparently there was a lot of tension. People didn't like it. Obviously, he threw a lot of people out of the rotation, right? He kind of fucked up the rotation. So a lot of people were upset about that, and the fact that he was taking a lot more shots because they were losing. So he didn't care. He's just trying to get his numbers up, right? I guess there's different things too, right? But I heard he didn't fit well.
Yeah.
Well, you can't blame
him. You
can't blame him, because at the same time, we don't know. Nobody knows what Orlando's doing over there. They're collecting power forwards like it's the 80s. So, you don't know what they're doing over there. So you can't even blame him. That was a dysfunctional situation going on. Look, they flipped Oladipo and draft picks for, by the end of it, Ross and a pick. So think of all the guys that went through that program, and look who's left out of all of that. You know, so it's a disaster over there. It's an underrated train wreck over there, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I was gonna say the one thing about Ibaka that I like is one thing about Toronto is they love their hustle guys. They love their hard hat guys. And judging from what you saw tonight in terms of the intensity of Ibaka, and as well as the next topic I want to get into, which is P.J. Tucker, the P.J. Tucker trade for Sullinger. The reason why I like that's the Tucker trade a lot, just the fact that, two things. Number one, you're getting somebody, you're getting rid of somebody who's unproductive for somebody who's now can contribute something to the team. But not just that, I think it's a guy that can, one thing about Tucker, he's going to increase the defensive intensity of this team. You know what I mean? And between him and Ibaka, and even Carroll to an extent, because that's going to make him play harder too. I think the intensity on defense, especially what you're going to need going ahead in the playoffs, that is what I like most about this trade. Offensively, you know, you can even see from tonight he's not that guy. But defensively is where, you know, is where he cashes his checks. So I think that's important, and that's why I really like that trade with Tucker.
Yeah, man, he's going to bring a whole new defensive culture. Like that culture, like that intensity, and that's how you change culture. It's not about like coaching. Well, it is a bit about coaching, but it's just like attitude, right? And that's what kind of makes and your actions and of your leaders. And I think that's with bringing in Tucker alone, just based on off of that. He's going to help change everybody on the defensive end.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say that all of us was kind of trending, watching, either watching the ticker or watching our phone. And when that Tucker deal came in at 3 o'clock on the nose, we were all kind of like excited about that. And especially when we found out it was only for two second rounders and Sully, I think we were all like, yes, that's a move that we all like. Because as you said, like, yeah, he doesn't bring any offense, but Toronto has been one of the most offensive teams in the league, even since Bargnani days. You know what I mean? It's just that our defense has always been poor. So bringing a guy like that who does not care, like he can get an egg on offense and he wouldn't even care about
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so to get a guy that would do all the little grunt work, duty work, he'll go into the corners and, you know what I mean, do the stuff that other guys don't do. He'll do the elbow grease stuff. It's something that we dearly missed. We thought we were going to get that from Carroll, but he's been a bust so far.
He's broken. He's broken.
Yeah, you're right. It's probably injury related, but regardless, joke's on us, right?
Yeah.
So to get Tucker for Sullinger and two second rounders, hey, I think we all could salute our hat and give him credit for staying strong, because we know we're hearing stupidness how they wanted a first rounder. We're like, that should never happen. And then he stuck to his guns and got it for his cost and not theirs, right?
Yeah, they had that deal in the bag already, from what I heard. I remember I was telling y'all before, the deal was basically in the bag. Basically, it was just about to get, it was signed off and to be delivered earlier. But what was it? It was not Boston. Boston dropped out of it, but LA, the Clippers, they were entertaining on giving up their a draft pick, and then they were like, you know what, forget it, it's not worth it, right? Once it came down to the get down, and that's why the Raps had to throw in that second one, because it was let's get it done, because initially it was one. So no, we were all like, why two? Like, not worth two, but they had to do it right, like last minute, and say, okay, let's just get this done now. Right, because the other thing too was they were actually they were even contemplating on going after Wilson, but they just didn't want to give up any of their young assets. And even though I heard they were going to offer something like, I want to say like Sacken in two firsts and something else, right? And they're like, you know what, it's not worth giving up. Masai was very adamant, I don't want to give up assets if I don't have to, right? So, you know, I like we're all saying, I think the two people on our radar was Wilson and Tucker. And you know what? I would rather someone like a Tucker, because he's not going to demand anything. He's not going to demand the ball. No. With two heavy, dominating, you know, offensive players in Larry and DeRozan, we don't need it. You know.
And again, it's all about matchups at this point, right, going forward. And it's all about matching up with Cleveland. That's my eyes. Like, anytime when we're thinking about trades and whatnot, I'm not even thinking about regular season. Nope. I'm not even thinking about first round. All I'm thinking about the matchup with Cleveland. Yep. And you need somebody at the small forward position to at least try to not cover LeBron, but at least to get in his way. And you need a power forward to at least, you know, get in the way of Love. Because Patterson can't do it. Siakam can't do it. So we needed those two guys for matchup purposes. And that's it. And we got them. And I'm happy that.
Scott, let me ask you something. I actually think it's still a good idea for us to go after Wilson in off season, if by chance we can offset either Carroll or JV's contracts, and if we can do that, I wouldn't mind giving some young assets. And to your point about not necessarily wanting somebody that's going to disrupt the flow between Didi and Lowry, I actually think we do need that. And the thing is, what I like about Wilson is, although he really built his success coming into the league on the defensive side, but his offense over the year has gotten better and better from his New York days right up until he's in with Denver. I actually think that it would be good for Toronto to get another kind of offensive threat to disrupt the ISO ball between those two. I know you may say that we had that experience with Gay, and that didn't work good at all whatsoever. Yeah. But the difference I find with Wilson, other than with Gay was strictly an offensive player. He didn't bring any other tangibles to the court, as opposed to where Wilson, he's kind of like that going with hockey turns with an offensive defensive forward type mentality, where he can play both sides of the court. Mm-hmm. I actually like him where he has good enough offense where it's respectable, where it would get the ball a little bit less sticky in situations where Toronto plays their game.
And I know we talk a lot about this amongst ourselves, you know, but I'm going to tell you, there's, when it comes to basketball, and it's just my experience, and I'm by no means do I know anything about this level, but just the dynamics of coaching and making a roster, and it doesn't matter what level it is, but making a successful roster, there's no rhyme or reason. You can say Wilson will work, and probably would. What I think, personally, for this team, and the way that I see Masai going, the reason why I say not to go the Wilson route, and I think it's better we went the Tucker route, is just because right now, the way that Casey wants to coach the team is a defensive-minded way. And from talking to Casey before, he didn't have the pieces to play defenses. Because that's my whole thing is I love playing defense. I love to coach a team that plays defense. So does Casey. But you need those pieces, right? And I think Wilson could fit in that piece. But the centerpiece to a defense is in the middle. For me, you got to build a defense around what's in the middle, right? I mean, Ibaka is great. He's a great piece, but he's a great weak side help piece, right? I still think that JV is the X factor. And from what I gather, and no one has said it directly to me, JV is on ice and is going to be probably shipped out come summer. And I think the piece that Masai is going to go after in the summer isn't going to be a wing. Unfortunately, it's going to be a center. Really? And it may be I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I think that's the direction he's going.
Just
think about it, right? Like, you would have heard rumors, oh, they want to go after this guy, they want to go after that guy. I really think if they're going to go make any big move, it's Val. And maybe they'll give up, because there's so many young asses, maybe they'll give up their first. Val a first, maybe someone else, I don't know. And you get a primetime center. That's just what I think. And the other thing, too, is what I think is once you get a training camp under your belts, I really think the third option is going to be Ibaka, right? So I think the scoring touch, yeah, and I see what you're saying. You need another wing to score. But I think with a point guard that's so dominant and averages like almost 20 points or over 20 points, you have DeRozan, which averages over in the mid-20s.
Yeah,
you know, Ibaka is going to be averaging in the high teens. There's too much. The ball can only go so many places, right?
Yeah,
so
I agree.
You know, I think the centerpiece right now is to get a center that can move and that can stabilize the middle. I mean, there's not too many of them. I don't know. I'm just saying wishful thinking. I'm not saying I like this center, but I just think a center that can. And he's not the greatest defender from what I think he's raw, but I like someone like a Drummond. Now, I don't know about the numbers. I didn't look into it. I just remember hearing rumors about it, and I thought, I'd rather Ibaka at this moment than him. But if that's a possibility, you having a Drummond and an Ibaka, a Lowry and a DeRozan, if you can throw Carroll in there and you can throw Tucker, think about that. I think that's a contending roster.
I was going to say, of course, you got to make that. Listen, and that was a rumor that you were hearing before, like this week, that there was a – and I thought that was the craziest rumor for Drummond for Valanciunas. So
yeah, but hold on, well, before you go any further, just 1 second. That was before Ibaka. It wasn't after Ibaka. That rumor was before Ibaka. That offer was instead of Ibaka. So I'm just saying, going into the summer, Masai already said, Masai doesn't like making, he likes to make off-season moves. So anything big, that's what I was telling you, Headley. You know, Carol Valanciunas probably were not going to get moved unless it was something that really was going to be a game changer. And there was nothing on the table that was going to change the game like that, that was worth doing now.
But I'll say this, and I'll touch on what you were saying, and I'll touch on something Julie was saying before too. I think that you're right about that with the maybe moving Valanciunas in the summer, because I do think that his value is going to be more appreciated in the playoffs when the game slows down. And usually he plays good in the playoffs, but I think I think once it slows down, I think like his value is going to be more. It's you're going to see it more, and that's probably going to be a point where you're going to want to sell high after the playoffs is over, because just him crashing the boards. Because that's the thing in the playoffs. It doesn't matter how much the small ball and the threes and D's and everything else, like the game always slows down at the end. It always slows down in the playoffs in May and June. You know, and it's all about the paint at a certain point in time. Like, so I think that's where he's going to be valued at. And it's funny because even last year during that playoff run, you know, you saw like he started to jump a level before he got hurt.
But it comes back to one thing, though, guys. Again, and you can slice it 18 different million ways of how what you want to add and what you want. But it comes down to one thing, the coach's vision. Whether you like Casey or not, his vision has always been, and we laugh about this, but his vision has been having a defensive-minded team. It's probably the first time I've seen Casey smile so much towards the end of a game.
The whole thing about Wilson, I like the Tucker, and I actually like the Tucker trade because of what we had to give up more at the trade deadline. What I was saying about Wilson is if we can get Wilson and shed one of those contracts, meaning shed either Cal's contract or JV's contract, I would do it. You know what I mean? If it meant that they would take one of those contracts and a young asset and a young piece in order to get Wilson, I would do that. And then we haven't touched on it yet, but I know myself, if he can do it in long spurts or not, I liked, and we saw how it worked in this game, where you slide Ibaka to the five, and hopefully, you know, we were talking about Terrence Jones, who got waived, or something like that. If you bring him in at a four, say you do get rid of one of those contracts in the offseason, all of a sudden, that team is looking much stronger offensively and defensively than in recent years.
When could players, and I'm not too sure, when could teams sign players that got dropped?
As soon as they clear waivers. But the thing with
when does waivers get cleared?
Well, the thing with Terrence Jones, he basically signed a veteran minimum for $1 million. Because if I understand correctly, like let's just say he had like a $6 million contract, right? When he gets cut, another team can pick him up, but then they're on the hook for the like whatever the prorated amount of his contract is.
Yeah.
Now, if he clears waivers now, then now all of a sudden he's up for grabs. But the thing is, now he can choose his destination as opposed to before, if he's on waivers. A team can pick him up, and I think it goes by some kind of the worst record or gets deemed the kind of like a snail kind of lottery where they get first dibs kind of thing.
Yeah.
But once he gets cleared, he can go to any team at that point, right? So will he go to the team that has the most money that's under the cap that can give him the most,
or will he go with the team where?
Pardon?
Is it still a prorated rate? So like let's say if you come for waivers, is it are you signing a new contract or signing like a
it's still going to be prorated. So even if you sign a $10 million contract, it'll be prorated for the last 30 games of the season.
Okay, that's what I was asking. But it's only for one season though, correct?
Well, but that's the thing. But he could do it for the remainder. But you know how they do it the remainder, and they can put they can, and that's the thing, they can tag on like a player's options to that, right? Mm-hmm. But typically you don't see, there's a rule where you can't give a guy a vet minimum and then give him a second year term worth at $10 million, right? Mm-hmm. It has to be within their staggered pay, like there's only a certain amount of pay raise you can give, like I think it's like 20%, I don't know what it is. It's only a certain pay raise you could put within contracts. Mm-hmm. So typically speaking, like him, where he took a veteran minimum because if it was because he was injury prone or whatever the case may be. I mean, he was, I don't know if he had a checkered stint, but I mean, money wasn't rolling to him when come the off season. So he took a veteran minimum. So we know whatever contract he takes now, he's going to want to keep that open where he can get paid come summer.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. But at least if he's on your team, and that's what I understand. That's why I'm not, cause you know, with all the whole thing with the Birds, right? Because that's what happened with Biz. We only signed Biz for 1 year because mm-hmm. he had an opt out in the second year, and then we didn't have his bird rights where we could sign him as our own afterwards. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think that would be the same situation with Terrence Jones. And now, not only do we have Lowry that we have to re-sign, we got Ibaka and we have Tucker. So it'll be interesting how that works.
The only thing I was just going to add to this is just in terms of Tucker. I know, Julian, you were saying before that you're looking at it from an aspect of that you want to see him cover LeBron and maybe be able to slow him down just a little bit, even though you know he can't be stopped. It's funny. I was never really looking at it in terms of a LeBron. I was looking at it more. I was looking at it more of a factor of them just for the path of them trying to get back to the conference finals. Because I think when I look at Tucker, I think he's going to be real physical with the Bradley Beals, the Otto Porters, the Jay Crowders, you know, the Avery Bradleys, mm-hmm. those type of players. Like those are the guys I think that you're kind of targeting for on the path to Cleveland. And I think he's really important there. Because I think without him there, I think those guys, not to say they're gonna run wild, but you know, they gotta be, you know, in terms of like what Shaquette like to say, they gotta be touched up a little bit. And I know he brings that factor, and I think he helps with those type of wing players on the way to Cleveland. You know what I mean? Like, of course he's going to help in the Cleveland series too, but I think he's really important in those aspects that, you know, when Beal gets hot, you can throw somebody like him out there and just be an annoyance for a few minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, 100%. And you know, obviously he's going to help for the remainder of the season, but I don't think he was necessary. Like, what? Nor do I think he was needed, well, me personally, to be like a Washington, or not to say Washington isn't a great team and Beal isn't a great player, but I'm thinking the guys that we have right now, we should beat them. We should beat them without Tucker. That's just me, but that's what I'm
without
thinking.
Tucker and without Ibaka, or just
no. I'm just saying without Tucker. I'm saying that Tucker to me should not have been needed to beat those teams. That's just me personally. Obviously, it's going to help. Obviously, it's going to be great having him down the stretch. But me, my whole vision was always thinking matchups, Cleveland. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
That's a good point.
You want to win. Like, what's the point? Yeah. Like you want to get back to the conference finals, obviously, but you want to do one step better, right? That's what I'm thinking. You want to you want to get to the finals. Like at this point, before Tucker and Ross trade for Ibaka, we weren't going to get there to the conference finals. But now I'm thinking, I'm not saying we're going to get to the finals, like to the NBA finals, but I'm thinking this increases our chances to get to the finals, to get past Cleveland. It's not going to happen, but you just want to be better each year, or at least get to that point. So
yeah, it makes their death better, definitely, for sure. So that was part one, the Raptors trade section. Click below for part two of the podcast, where we break down the Boogie Cousins trade and we discuss the winners and losers of the NBA's trade deadline. Hurry up, it's cool. Click on right now. Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Click on right now. All right, I'll catch you in a few seconds. It's the Av Podcast.
Mm-hmm.